So this is the next in our series of briefings on the comp plan, obviously focusing on the transportation system plans. So I'll turn it over to Eric and PBOT staff to walk us through what you have in front of us and ventilate the issues.
All right. Thank you, Mayor. So as you mentioned, this is the third of three briefings that we scheduled to get you oriented to the comp plan implementation package. The first one was about the zoning map and the public involvement program that's proposed. The second one was about some of the details of the code proposals, the mixed use, the employment, the campus, residential changes, and some miscellaneous changes. And this is focused on the TSP. I'm going to get out of the way and turn it over to Art and his staff to go through the details of this one. But I also want to mention before I leave that so we're gearing up for two public hearings that are scheduled on October 6th and 13th, 2 p.m. time certains. That's when we'll start hearing input from the public on this, and we'll be back in October and November to work through what to do about those comments.
And remind me, you know, I should know this, but remind me about those hearings. Are we going to divide those hearings by subject matter, or are they all ecumenical?
Bring whatever issue you'd like to. Okay. I think there's two open questions. One is how late do you want to go on those two evenings to get through all the testimony, and then the related issue is if you don't, whether you want to schedule another. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to that point on the 13th.
So you don't see a virtue in trying to subdivide it by subject?
I think it gets there's so many different subjects in here, and people may find it difficult to even identify which topic they're talking
about. They may want to talk about more than one. Right. So, okay. All right. I just appreciate that. I just hadn't thought about that nuance until now. Thank you. Okay.
So I'll turn it over to Art.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
So as Eric briefly mentioned, this morning's conversation is specifically focused on the TSP and the Stage 2 elements of the TSP. And so we've arranged for a whole series of staff to come through and walk you through specific elements so that we can kind of focus the conversation and make sure that we understand the areas where you're most interested. I realize I neglected to introduce myself. So Art Pierce, I manage the Transportation Planning and Capital Program for the Bureau of Transportation. And so who we have with us today, Denver Agarda, to my right, has been the project manager for this overall effort of Stage 2. So he's sort of overseeing the whole effort of putting all the pieces together. And certainly if you see the scale of paper that we've produced through this process, it's been a lot to coordinate. Courtney Duke, who will be coming up in a little bit, has been the portfolio manager for the classifications, the maps, and plans section. Peter Hurley has been the portfolio manager for the performance measures and code sections. And Judith Gray has shepherded the TDM proposals. And so they'll each come up through the next hour or so to be able to walk through with you those pieces. So the next slide. So just a reminder of context. This graphic here is one that we've used for the last couple of years, showing the interrelationship between the statewide overall planning goal directives and the transportation planning rule, the regional transportation plan, and then the interrelationship between the comprehensive plan and the elements of the TSP that are part of the comprehensive plan, and which are shown in green, and then in the darker sort of blue-teal color is the transportation system plan elements. And so there's an overlapping element of those two efforts, but there's also discrete elements that are specific to the TSP and not part of periodic review that we're also working our way through. You'll see along the whole bottom there, there's a whole series of additional planning efforts that feed into this process that we want to make sure that we're always aware of. One of them that we're including in this latest update has been the Bicycle Master Plan, which was passed in 2010. So one of the major classification changes that we're bringing through with this effort has been those proposals that came through that two-year or so process. And of course, one of the other elements that we've become very attached to within PBOT is Portland Progress, the two-year action plan that we're in the process of updating now. So we'll be making sure there's a sort of a continuous dialogue between long-range planning and short-term actions within the Bureau. The next slide, which shows a pie-shaped element here, if you might remember, we were talking at the previous conversation with you about this notion of a trip gap. And essentially, what we're looking at is in between 2010 and 2035, if travel behavior stays the way it has been in 2010, we'll see an additional drive-alone trips of about 500,000 additional drive-alone trips. So pretty significant growth in individual people in single occupancy cars, and certainly without substantial changing to the street systems, we can't accommodate that growth in trips with people traveling in single occupancy vehicles. So we're knowing that that trip gap we need to bring down to try to keep roughly consistent with where we are today in terms of the number of people driving alone.
Well, I might restate that in a slightly political way, and you can tell me whether I got it right. Actually, I would, and this will preview some issues I want to talk about later.
Sure.
I would state that differently. I would say there is no feasible way to expand the street network to accommodate those trips by automobile.
For sure.
Rather than we would need to spend a lot of money on the automobile network to make it. So therefore, we know that we will not accommodate those trips by car.
Correct. Yes. And certainly the ripple effects of needing to provide the scale of parking that would be required for the end of the trip, we would have a radically different form to our central city and to the whole city in general if we were trying to incorporate the full needs of all those automobile trips.
Right. And the other thing that occurs to me is that on the planning part of it, there's no reference to transit plans, and obviously TriMet is a separate government entity.
Right.
My experience with TriMet is I get what I'm given, and I can comment on what their plans are but not tell them what they need to do. And so I think that we need to be all conscious of how are we going to truly partner with TriMet on many things rather than kind of stiff-arming and lobbying occasionally and seeing if we...
Well, we're sliding the check back and forth across the table.
Yes, exactly.
Right, right. I totally agree. In fact, we're working on a concerted effort that we're calling Enhanced Transit Corridors. So it's really focusing in on that mid-level transit improvements in terms of bus service or in moving perhaps to articulated bus service on certain lines. That is really looking at what changes the city would need to do and what increase in service TriMet would need to do to bring that next level of service to bear.
Yeah, I mean, we've never, in my knowledge, had a joint city council TriMet board meeting, which we probably should have.
And good idea.
That's a very good idea, yeah. They do have a overall long-range plan for their service, and then what they're working on right now is the service enhancement plans that are a sub-area focused effort that will all be rolled together that's looking at increases in transit service. Most of it has been focused on restoring the service that was cut during the recession and bringing that back up to frequent service or adding in new lines, but what we're working on encouraging them is to look beyond as the next rise in transit service in terms of what we can do. So the next slide. How are we going to solve this trip gap? How are we going to keep the growth in vehicle travel at bay? One of the key pieces that we're very aware of, I think acutely so in Portland, is that the beginning of any transportation plan is actually a land use plan. And that's why we focus so much on the comprehensive plan, focus on centers and corridors, is that we need to be emphasizing growth in areas in which you can serve your daily needs without the need of vehicle trips. And also be able to serve them well through transit service and pedestrian bicycle facilities. So the focus and investments that we reviewed of the TSP projects in the stage one of the TSP, we're very specifically trying to reinforce the land use strategy that's articulated in the comprehensive plan. Expanded transit service is shown here, but parking management is also one of the key elements. It's making sure that we're using parking regulation and parking management as a policy tool, making sure that that's really thought of in that way and incorporated into all levels of the planning work. And then transportation demand management, making sure that our citizens are able to take full advantage of the types of options that we're putting forward to them and that they know the variety of travel choices that they have. So the next slide shows that through transportation modeling, the projection is that in 2035, we can relieve the vast majority of that trip cap, so that it leaves about 63,000 additional single occupancy vehicle trips that is projected to grow. But the majority of those trips are able to be accommodated in other ways through transit, biking, and walking. In terms of how we will address that final bit of gap, where we really think that the greatest opportunity is through additional usage of cycling facilities as well as TDM incentives. And so that's where we're focusing a lot of the effort, and a lot of the policies that you'll be talking about as we go on this morning are trying to address and reinforce that cycle. Any questions on any of those pieces so far? Most of that's elements that you're pretty familiar with.
I have a question about the baseline you're using of 2010. So how would you describe, so this looks forward and says, how are we going to manage the growth? But your baseline, the current scenario presents challenges. And so how do you describe the 2010 baseline before you build in the growth?
Well, 2010 is the base model year for this planning effort.
Right.
So that's why that was chosen as the unit of this planning effort.
But you've given us sort of the Armageddon of 2035 if we don't do something. But go back and tell me your assessment of where we are.
Oh, okay.
Because you're using a baseline that for some people is what we're living with and presents its own challenges.
Right. What we found through the American Community Survey is that this, the last 5 years have been very effective, particularly in directing travel towards biking and walking. But the most interesting of those elements has been working from home. That's been a really significant growth in people's work and the daily commute is from the kitchen to their home. So that's a key element is working from home, which actually means most of the fiber networks, those kind of elements.
But I think what Commissioner Fish is asking is, not what's happened in the last 5 years, but assuming we're starting in 2010, do we think that in 2010 we're in a good place that we just need to sort of keep there?
I think I like where you're headed. We're not starting from nirvana. We're starting from some places that work pretty well and some other places that don't work so well. Is that what
you're saying? Thank you. Because this what you refer to a pie, I looks like a triangle to me. I'll ask my son. He does the geometry house, but. You're saying that if we don't do some pretty radical things by 2035, we got a hell of a problem. I guess I'm asking to quantify what's the problem we have now. Not so much the progress made over the last 5 years, but the baseline. There are those in our community who think the baseline isn't so great right now. And so how do you describe the current challenge?
Well, I think right now one of the challenges we have is the length of trips that people are trying to make are congestion, particularly on the regional network.
I think one of the challenges that we're seeing today is that the length of trips are putting extra strain, particularly on the regional network. So the freeway system in particular is where I think we're seeing the most acute congestion in terms of travel behavior. And we're seeing people who are, because of that longer travel, are spending more money on their transportation budget. So that's, I think, one sort of particular challenge.
Cut to the chase here. Yeah. Maybe when we get to the actual policy language, right, or the language of the plan itself, I think where you're headed on this, and I completely agree. If you live at 146th and Powell,
right,
and you can't walk anywhere, and you can't safely bike, and there's been a pedestrian death in the last 30 days, the current transportation system is not working well for you.
Sure.
So right, you have good data about how right, good and bad that is, right? You
right,
have good data about which neighborhoods are very walkable and you know,
right,
are 20-minute neighborhoods. You have good data about which ones aren't. You know, that, I think that's what you're thinking
sure,
about,
sure.
And I completely agree that we ought to do a better job of that snapshot, not necessarily in a presentation like this, but in the plan itself. But here's where we are. We're not in nirvana. You know, here's how we
sure,
measure how we're not in nirvana. Is that where you were headed with this? I agree with that completely.
Mayor is now officially my spokesman.
He's doing great. He's
Don't
doing
put
great.
Words in your mouth whenever you let me.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I think that's a really important point.
Sure.
Because
yeah,
we shouldn't pretend that everything's great, and
right,
we and you do have good data
sure,
about where we are.
Right. And you recall from, or maybe you recall from when we were looking at the project investment choices, we very directly emphasized the need to address equity concerns, the need to invest in areas that are high in population of seniors and youth, and so the investments particularly are trying to address those types of challenges first. And so a lot of, when you look at where our recent regional flexible funds applications were, they were really all focused or primarily focused in Southwest and East Portland. Yep. So I'm going to pass it on to Denver Garda, who's going to walk us through a little bit more details of the elements.
Yes, good morning. I'm Denver Garda. I'm a senior transportation planner, and as Art said, I was the project manager for this phase of the TSP update. I'm going to be talking mostly to the next two sheets on your handout. On the screen, it'll show up as a series of slides, but it's the same information, and basically I want to orient you to what is the TSP, what's in the TSP, and how we've been updating it over the past couple of years in stages. So this sheet on the left, it outlines the components of the TSP in the simplest form. As you can see, there's an introduction, there's the policies and goals from the comp plan. We have TSP objective language, classifications, project lists, some plans, so the refinement plans, master street plans, and modal plans, implementation strategies, and the glossary. So this is a very simplified version of what's in the TSP. It actually takes the form of three massive binders. This is volume one of the TSP. So it's quite a substantive document. We are updating it in stages. And as you'll recall, the first stage was the update of the TSP, of the comp plan. So the policies and projects and programs and the financial plan of the TSP was adopted with the comp plan update that was adopted in June of this year. And now we're in our second stage. And the primary objective of both the first and second stages is to complete the comp plan update. So in the same way that BPS is carrying forward zoning code to do the early implementation, we're trying to update the TSP to align it with the comp plan direction that has been set. And so we are in stage two, and that's what we're here to talk about today. The first stage is the stage that shows up in blue on that slide. So you'll see that there are three components that were part of the comp plan update, and those are the only parts of the TSP that have been updated to date. The last comprehensive update of the TSP was way back in 2007, so we have a big job to try and get things back in line with not only the new comp plan, but a lot of plans that have been adopted over that period of time. So the stage two, again, is what we're here to talk about today. The components are shown in orange on that slide, the sheet on the left. And these are the items that are contained within the recommended draft that you have in your package, so this document here for the TSP. And figuring out what we were going to include in this stage, we knew that we didn't have neither the time nor the requirements as part of periodic review to complete everything. And so we had to decide, you know, what is included in the packet we have before us. The first and most important, again, was the council adopted work plan for the periodic review, so what's required by the state to complete the comp plan update. The second items were things that we had updated and been adopted by council, such as the Portland bike plan since 2007. Third, there are a few early implementation items that we're carrying forward or advancing to carry out the new comp plan direction, in particular community involvement objectives and performance measures. Within the TSP are updated to reflect new direction and important goals and policies in the comp plan. And also we're incorporating some key concepts from the urban design framework of the comp plan, in particular civic corridors, neighborhood corridors, and centers are being updated as part of our street design classifications.
So just a question on community involvement. Are you referring to the community involvement committee that is under the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, or do you have a separate one?
No, we had our own. In fact, I'll go ahead and advance to that, since it's a couple slides down the road. Okay, then I'll finish this up quick, and then I'll get to that in a second. So we have had a series of, as part of this update, we have had a series of drafts, and starting with an internal draft, and then in October of last year, our first public draft was released. We, in December of last year, had the public proposed draft for that went to the Planning Commission, series of hearings that we had at Planning Commission. And then this recommended draft is the result of that testimony and amendments made by the Planning Commission. So some of the recommendations also within our second phase are directly tied to the zoning code proposals that are being carried out by BPS as part of early implementation, in particular the mixed-use zones and the campus institutional zones and elements of TDM and parking, which you'll hear about. So even after all that work, we will still have a few items remaining that are not mandatory or required by the periodic review requirements of the state. And so you'll see those in green on that slide. Those are the few items that remain. The one thing I wanted to emphasize is that with each of these stages, the elements that are part of the TSP are being updated in the same process. So it's a legislative process, which involves each of these drafts as well as, you know, hearings with both Planning Commission and City Council. So they'll be adopted in the same way, which is technically a comp plan amendment process. Stage three will result in a new, hopefully more user-friendly and streamlined version that is more accessible for the community and for the staff that's using the TSP. The last point I wanted to make is just that the central city elements are not being updated as part of our proposal. So there are goals and policies, classifications, projects. All of those are being carried forward with the Central City 2035 plan that's currently at Planning Commission. So those will be coming down the road. Public involvement. So we did have, in addition to more than 1,000 interested parties who were staying on top of the development of the plan over the last couple of years, we had an important group that was the Transportation Expert Group, which we formed to advise us on the development of both Stage 1 and Stage 2 of the TSP update. It was comprised of 20 community members and half a dozen or so representatives from partner agencies, including BES and Parks. It was formed back in 2014, January, and it met monthly over the course of both stages up to the point that we released the Planning Commission draft earlier this year. So through fall and winter we also had several outreach events that were held throughout the city, and approximately 600 people showed up for those, representing neighborhood associations, advisory committees, business associations, and we did special outreach to community and social organizations. The PSC received a number of comments through the hearing process. There were over 400 written comments and comments on the map app, as well as people that showed up to testify in person. Each of those helped to shape the Planning Commission's recommendation, which is in the recommended draft. And essentially what the Planning Commission formally decided was to recommend that City Council amend the TSP as shown in the recommended draft. And also they supported changes to our Title 17 code. Technically, it's the public improvement section of Title 17, and those elements are part of Section 14 and 16, which are the street vacation and transportation demand management sections of our draft. So there are also Title 17 code changes that are contained within this proposal. So we're going to walk through the elements of each of these elements that we're proposing to change. And along the way, we're going to highlight the testimony, some of the primary issues that came up in the testimony that we were hearing through the Planning Commission hearings. Peter Hurley is going to start off by covering our proposal for updating our performance measures within the TSP. And we'll go ahead and start, Peter.
Good morning, council members. I'll talk a little bit about the performance measures section of the transportation system plan. Art talked about the importance of closing the trip gap. This section, Section 10, performance measures, establishes the numeric targets for measures that support closing that gap and achieving the economic, environmental, and equity goals that we have in the comprehensive plan. What is before you now is the first round of recommended performance measure amendments. Round one addresses periodic review requirements, the requirements that the state has for us that we agreed to and council adopted several years ago, and consistency with both the Climate Action Plan and the Portland Plan. So the measures that are in front of you attempt to put into or do put into the transportation system plan measures that were adopted as part of those two plans. The second round, the next round, which will occur in Transportation System Plan Stage 3, which you'll see next year, will propose performance measures to be consistent with the regional transportation plan. So it's kind of a two-step process. There's a step in front of you now. There'll be a step in front of you next year. Getting back to Commissioner Fish's question about the 2010 baseline, as part of that next step, we'll also be looking at system completeness. In other words, how complete are the road, transit, bicycle and pedestrian networks, the crosswalks. That's something we've been partnering with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to look at system completeness in various parts of the city, so that going forward, we're also looking at that measure. The Planning and Sustainability Commission recommends that you add two measures from the Climate Action Plan, one reducing overall transportation-related climate pollution by 50% from 1990 levels, the second reducing vehicle miles traveled to 11 miles per person per day. Current baseline, or the baseline from 2010, is 14 miles, so we'll take the per person as the population grows. We're also trying to reduce the per person level of trips, and we're proposing to do that from 14 to 11 miles per day over that period. We're also proposing, and PSC is recommending, a new measure to reduce parking and traffic impacts in neighborhoods from new mixed-use buildings. That measure would double the percentage of car-free households in those new mixed-use buildings from approximately 13% in 2014 to 25% in 2025.
Steve, can I ask you a philosophical question? In terms of reduction of transportation-related carbon emissions, I guess I understand theoretically that as cars improve fuel efficiency, as electric cars and the price of electric cars come down, as car sharing becomes more prevalent, and as people use other modes of transportation, we're gonna be successful with individuals. But how do you tackle transportation related carbon emissions when you have interstate highway system, freight mobility, and particularly now the burden of having a port that doesn't have the same robust container business, so it's being shipped in from the south and the north. So with all the things that you can kind of get your arms around in terms of the behavior of individuals living in Portland, how do you also tackle the factors that we have less control over, which, you know, relating to interstate travel, freight, and technology?
I actually don't know what the prospects are for reducing, I mean, other than improved, you know, fuel efficiency standards, et cetera, for reducing carbon emissions from freight. And I think it is extremely difficult, and we do focus, I mean, that's where we are. I mean, ideally, you have individuals traveling by means other than single occupancy vehicles, and one side effect of that should be that there's less congestion for freight vehicles that really can, I mean, only, you know, if freight which can only be transported by vehicles. Now, but I actually haven't asked my team that. I mean, are we factoring in either an increase or prospectively a decrease in freight carbon emissions? And what percentage of transportation-related carbon emissions are freight versus individuals? I've never actually asked that question.
So the Climate Action Plan that the Council has adopted and the Climate Smart Communities Plan that the region has adopted both do look at freight carbon emissions as a component of the overall set of climate pollution. And there are strategies to reduce those emissions. A couple of those were mentioned by Commissioner Novick, the two larger ones, one of which is to reduce the number of single-occupant vehicles that are getting in the way of those trips, within the city of Portland and to some extent within the region. The other of which is technology. And technology plays a particularly important role in reducing freight emissions over time. We're certainly going to anticipate we're going to see some of that as autonomous vehicles become, and connected vehicles become, increasingly common, and particularly on interstate highways. But freight emissions are parts of both of those plans. I don't know off the top of my head. That's something that we can take a look at and get back to you on.
Another question I had about car-free households is how much was the PSC able to consider the potential impact of driverless cars and the assumption that, I mean, my assumption that driverless cars will probably be shared ownership and they'll be sort of going from one person to another, taking trips, requiring less parking, but perhaps in some ways being it easier to take individual trips.
Planning and Sustainability Commission, as part of the package of recommendations has recommended that the Bureau of Transportation evaluate a policy, and Commissioner Smith has drafted a policy for us to take a look at around connected and autonomous vehicles. So that's part of our current work plan that will be coming in front of you as part of TSP Stage 3. We'll be taking a look at connected and autonomous vehicle policies. There's a both promise and peril associated with autonomous vehicles. You could end up with significantly more trips and no occupancy vehicle trips. You could also end up with fewer trips if many of those are shared. So part of what we want to do is to make certain that the city policy is based on the outcomes that we want to achieve, which are the economic, the environmental, and the equity outcomes, and reducing emissions and reducing the total number of trips. So that's the policy that we anticipate bringing in front of Planning and Sustainability Commission and eventually City Council.
Right. And the development form impact. The reason we're having this conversation is this is supposed to be the marriage of transportation policy and land use policy. And there's a great deal of speculation right now, and I think it's interesting, and we'll learn more about whether autonomous vehicles and apps like Uber and Lyft mean that the utilization of a vehicle is much greater per unit of time than it used to be, and that we will have the vehicles we have will be more likely to be in operation and less likely to be parked. That will have a very if that's true, and I think it might be, if that's true, it will have a very profound impact on how many parking garages and parking spaces we need. So that's a conversation that I think is really important that these two bureaus be having and trying to learn about over time.
But they'd still be having to park somewhere to stop and drop off the user and pick up the user.
Right, but there are more parking spaces by far than vehicles in the city, if you count all the on-street spaces and everything else. So the question will be, and this is actually a question for PVC right now, who's getting ready to build a parking garage. Who builds the last parking garage if this theory is correct?
I think we are in danger of having more cars on the road.
That's not what the demographic trends are showing. The demographic trends are showing people are buying less cars.
I mean, what a driverless car will do, logically, is go to one person, take them somewhere, then go to another person and take them somewhere, and they'll hardly park at all. I mean, except just to drop people off for 5 seconds.
And this is still speculation at this point.
I think clearly this is going to be a robust process in stage three when we are, Peter's already started to prepare some white papers that sort of speculate on some of these sort of potential outcomes. So I think certainly whenever the council is ready to dive deeper, I think in the coming months we'll have more information that we can bring forward around autonomous vehicles. I think we better keep Peter moving. I'm worried we're not going to get through all of your slides for you.
Okay, yeah. The next slide. So we're also recommending two mode share targets. The first is for all trips, also known as daily trips. The second is for commute trips. Modeling shows that if we implement the new land use plans that the council has adopted, the transportation system plan project list, strong transportation demand management, and more small bicycle projects, we can get close to 70% of the daily trips by city residents taken by bicycle, transit, carpooling, and walking. We're also proposing a placeholder 70% commute mode share target consistent with the climate action plan. I do want to note, however, that current modeling projects that we will fall short of this target. So after the next round of modeling, we may be back to propose a reduction in the 2035 commute mode share target. So I'm distinguishing between the daily and the commute trips. Currently we're proposing, and Planning and Sustainability Commission is recommending, the 70% targets.
Mayor, this is the second time now this morning that we've had the reference to working from home. And within the last year, we had that council conversation about to what extent is the city updating its policies to allow certain people to work from home or to work from remote sites that are designed to keep, other locations throughout the city. I don't know where we are on that, but it does seem to me that if that is the future and we want to provide as flexible options to our workforce, presumably we're going to be doing something. Who should we check with on that to see if some thought is being given to how we have a more flexible city workforce?
Specific to the city?
Yeah.
Courtney Duke, Bureau of Transportation. I know that we've been working with HR and HR Director Anna Kenwit, and I know Commissioner Fritz was in a conversation about that as well. I also know there's quite a bit happening with the remodel of the Portland building, and so Sarah Schooley and the staff at the OMF with where we're going to all be when both the Portland building is being remodeled as well as after. So working from home policies are also family friendly policies. They're also mode share target policies. And so we've been talking with them about that. So, and also it's a bit cheaper if we have smaller amount of people coming downtown and having to work in a building. Are there ways that we can do that? So I do believe as a part of the Portland building remodel, there's conversations going on as what kind of pilot projects can we do for that? I think you also, it's a cultural shift for management as well as unions. So I know that's why we, partly with my role working with the Working Moms group here at the city through DEEP, that Anna Kenwit was who we were working with. And again, Commissioner Fritz was at a meeting with us when we were talking about the parental leave policy. And then how could we shift some policies? I believe also, it's my understanding, we also need to work with BTS. In terms of being able to access servers and the technology to be able to do that. So that's also, I think, both a financial and a technology question of not only do you give a policy to allow people to work from home, but are they able to actually access the right work, the right things they need to do? And I know there's also been some questions about privacy and public records requests related to that if you're using a personal device and how you do that. So again, it's my understanding that there are some folks from OMF and HR that are working towards that. And I think there's quite a bit of support both for the mode split targets as well as to be an employer of choice.
Courtney and my colleague Jeff Wagner will now talk about the classifications, maps, and recent plans.
Okay, I guess I'll just stay here.
Again, Courtney Duke, Bureau of Transportation. As mentioned, I was the lead for the comp plan and stage one, but I've been working on some other components here for stage two, along with Zeph Wagner, who's one of our associate planners in our group. The things we're gonna talk about now are some changes to the street classifications, some map changes, and some changes to the studies and plans chapters. Just a quick reminder that we have seven classifications on our streets here at the city. These are policy classifications. They're how we want the streets to function. They don't necessarily function that way now, but that's what we want in the future. So we have seven. See if I can do them off the top of my head. Traffic, transit, bicycle, pedestrian, street design, emergency response, freight. And we modified two of those as a part of this stage to help us implement the comprehensive plan changes as well as mentioned before, the bicycle plan of 2030. We also made some changes to the master street plan maps because we did some work since our last update in 2007. And then we made some changes to plans and studies to reflect some of those changes. So we'll go through those quickly and give you a quick update on those. And then Zeph is going to talk about two specific locations from the Planning Commission. So we made some changes to the bicycle classifications and objectives. As you may remember, the bicycle plan for 2030 was adopted in 2010 and had not actually been incorporated fully into the transportation system plan. So this was our opportunity to add those in. There were some revised objectives that came out of that plan, some new classifications, for example, the major city bikeway, and reducing a classification, taking out off-street path. And so we made incorporations into the objectives, the classification descriptions, and the maps. These are in sections 4 and 5. Sorry. One thing that we did as a part of that bicycle classification change was do some analysis with our freight committee and our pedestrian committee and our bicycle committee. We wanted to make sure that any changes to the bicycle classifications did not have any major impacts to the rest of the system. Again, the transportation system plan is a complete system, and some of the modal plans focus just on the one mode. So we did have what we called a joint modal committee. These were the staff of the committee, so the pedestrian, bike, and freight coordinators, as well as the chairs of all three of those committees, as well as staff, such as myself, Zeph, and Peter, meeting over a number of months to do some analysis to just double check where some of the major city bikeway changes would overlap with any of the freight changes. We also did that with transit. We were happy to see that there weren't as many locations that people feared that were going to be some major concerns, and we felt that through the classification changes and through design and project, we would be able to solve those problems. So we actually had a joint letter from those members in that committee for the first time. They all signed a letter accepting and approving the changes that we made. And that was a great group of people to work with, and we're still trying to work with them through the next phase.
Well, this is another case where Commissioner Fisher's point, I think, ought to be brought to bear, and that is I don't think we should assume that the baseline is success.
Correct.
For example, going is a priority truck street and has a bikeway on it.
Right.
Remember, my staff was nearly killed by a legal right turn by a truck on that street. We have a lot of deaths of bicyclists caused by legal right turns of trucks. Until the technology of trucks changes and the driver's getting an audible signal or some other kind of heads-up display that there's a bicycle in their blind spots, we're going to have these kind of conflicts. So we should be assiduously trying to reduce the friction between freight and bikes rather than assuming that we're okay as we are now. We're not okay. We're killing people. So I want to hear more about that later. But again, just because we didn't find a lot of conflicts doesn't mean it's okay.
Correct. Right.
And one of the key concerns, of course, was that if by classifying a street as a higher bicycle classification, if that brings on a capital improvement to make it more safe and comfortable for a cyclist, will that have an impact on freight throughput? And so, right.
Bike plan. Like, the right. assumption right. that right. we can make it work to have bike lanes on truck streets maybe right. is an incorrect assumption.
Right. Right. And what we actually, what we've also found is that on a lot of these facilities, actually, a off-street path may be the better solution. Maybe the only, right. And so, the main piece here at the classification level is to make sure that we're not piling up too many overlapping expectations onto the same space. Right.
Right. And the status quo, capital improvements that just make it reasonably safe between sure. bikes and trucks probably isn't going to be good enough. We're not going to get to Vision Zero. We're going to sure. keep killing people.
Right.
So I want to push you in that direction a bit and talk about that.
Great. Could you also remind me where do BES and PBOT meet and work out potential conflicts around bioswales? So a concern I sometimes hear from people about the bioswales that my bureau puts on the streets is that it has negative impacts on freight mobility, turning radiuses, those kinds of things. And I know this is an area where the two bureaus do sort of coordinate. Where in the two bureaus does that conversation rest?
The most, frequent conversation that we have, we meet monthly. Actually, we're meeting later today between BES and PBOT leadership. Denver Garda has been attending that as well, where we do talk about how to work through some of those elements. Many of the pieces that you're referencing, like Clay Street, for instance, was a concern. I think it was as we were learning about design improvements and how better to create truck turning radii, and I think we actually successfully navigated that with Clay Street as an example. So that's a very active conversation. There's also liaisons between BES and PBOT that are running on each other's floors on a daily basis to make the sort of ground level solutions work. Yeah.
Does that system have inputs so that freight mobility communities, business communities, others are able to come in? A Corky Collier knows he can come to that and say, hey, love the bioswale, but you've just taken out a right turn or you've impeded access to this.
Right. Mostly that's where we're relying on the classifications to help trigger for us the understanding this is an important route and then using those modal committees. So a project would go to the Freight Advisory Committee for input around its impacts.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to turn it over to Zeph Wagner to talk about two specific locations that both got testimony as well as conversation at the Planning and Sustainability Commission.
Good morning. I'm Zeph Wagner. I'm an associate planner at PBOT. Worked a lot on the street classification updates.
I wanted to highlight a couple issues that came up that we've heard a lot about, that Planning and Sustainability Commission heard a lot about, and you'll probably hear about too from the public. One is Hayden Island, and the other one is Northeast 7th and 9th in the Irvington and King neighborhoods. I'll cover Hayden Island first. This graphic shows the adopted bikeway network in the Hayden Island plan that was adopted by City Council by ordinance in 2009. So that directly updated the TSP at that time. So this has been what has been the case for the last 7 years. And I circled the Hayden Island Marina area, where at the time of the Hayden Island plan there was a concern about the idea of a bikeway classification on an existing pedestrian pathway between the condos and the waterfront. And so City Council amended an earlier draft of the Hayden Island plan to remove that bikeway classification and keep the pedestrian classification. So what's on the books now is no bikeway classification around there. If you go to the next page, you'll see the Planning and Sustainability Commission, their recommendation was to add a city bikeway classification along that pathway. And PBOT has heard a lot of concern from the community about the idea of not sticking with the Hayden Island plan recommendations. So that will probably come up. And then if you go to the next slide, we've also heard a lot of concerns around the western side of the island, or west of I-5, around the manufactured home park. That's an area where there's one section that's a existing pedestrian pathway, another section doesn't have anything right along the water. And we've just heard a lot of concerns about potential impacts to that community from residents and the owner. Even though nothing in the recommendation is changing, this is what has been on the books since 2009 with the Hayden Island plan.
So for the Tomahawk Island, what is the need for cyclists to have a route there? Where are they coming from or going to?
I think that's just providing basic mobility to all parts of the island. The idea of the bikeway along the waterfront, I think, is more about the idea that in the future, as the island changes, that would be a really good amenity to have to support development. I do want to point out that there's no TSP project for bikeways on Hayden Island along the waterfront. So these are just classifications. They would likely only trigger if there was a wholesale redevelopment of these properties. It would allow development review to have the ability to hopefully get easements and things like that by having it in the plan. But we have no active plans to come in and build a bikeway, which I think is a lot of the fear from the community. So the other issue that came up a lot was the 7th and 9th bikeway discussion. You may recall this came up a lot in the TSP project list as well when you were considering it in back in June. The Planning and Sustainability Commission was receiving public comment on the classifications at the same time that you were receiving public comment on the project list, so kind of overlapped. PBOT's been getting concerns from the neighborhood associations, Irvington, Elliott, and King in particular, for the last year about excessive traffic volumes on Northeast 7th Avenue, which is classified as a local traffic street, but it carries far higher volumes than that. So they're concerned about speed and volume and feel that it would be a good bike route as well for a neighborhood greenway. So the first slide here shows the bike plan recommendations was to have a major city bikeway on Northeast 9th, which is a quieter local street with a path going around Irving Park. And it would have a city bikeway on 7th. So both of them have were recommended to be bikeways in the bike plan, but a higher classification on 9th. And if you go to the next slide, you see the PSC recommendation responding to a high volume of public testimony advocating for Northeast 7th Avenue was to shift the major city bikeway over to 7th as far as it could. And part of the, I think part of the reasoning was our planned 7th Avenue bridge over I-84, just creating a direct route north, and then cutting over, it dead ends at Sumner, so cutting over to 9th at that point. The Planning and Sustainability Commission and PBOT have also received a lot of comments in opposition to this from other neighbors in the Irvington neighborhood in particular, just concerned about cut-through traffic. your decision in right, got through traffic. Your decision back in June with the project list was to amend it to show both alignments as possibilities so that PBOT can do a more rigorous public process. Through Fixing Our Streets, we do have funding now for this neighborhood greenway. So in the next few years, we'll be able to do that design process. This is setting more of just the policy framework of one of them being a more desired route if we can make it work.
So is this counting as the process to decide whether it's 7th or 9th?
No. If this recommendation is retained, I think it would just be pushing us to try to make 7th work if we can, but it doesn't tie us to that. Both of them are still bikeways, just one of them is a major city bikeway, and as we get into the design process, we may find that one or the other isn't feasible. It just sort of pushes us.
Does the Planning and Sustainability Commission, you know, obviously if they've considered the public input on that, is this their recommendation for which it should be?
Yeah. Okay, so those were the only two major issues that came up around bikeways. I just want to briefly mention, we also updated the street design classifications. That was mainly to incorporate the civic and neighborhood corridors and centers from the comp plan. And so we added civic corridor, civic main street, neighborhood corridor, and neighborhood main street classifications to be consistent with that. These classifications are based on the adjacent land use, trying to talk about how a street should change its design as it goes through a center, for example, or through an area of activity. We also rewrote substantial portions of the descriptions to emphasize a complete streets approach where possible and to better differentiate between the classifications.
Thank you, Zeph. So a couple other things that we made changes to were the master street plans. We added some three locations, mainly in East and Southwest Portland, of some work that we've done since 2007, since the last update. So we wanted to add those in and have them be policy. And I guess you can see that's in Cully, Division Midway, and then Tryon Stevens was our latest one that we just added. And that was when Commissioner Fritt Fish, we worked closely with Bureau of Environmental Services on the Tryon Stevens to look at different improvements and locations of those improvements. So they were a strong partner in that one. So and Denver worked on that. So if you had additional questions on that. So just remind you of that. We also made some changes to the refinement plans and studies chapter. This is actually something that we needed to do to meet some requirements. It was a lot of cleanup. We deleted a number of studies. I think we could delete the study related to the Milwaukee light rail since we had just completed building it. So we made some deletions. We made some modifications to others based on, again, the comprehensive plan update, based on the project list work that Zeph and Peter had done as part of stage one. And then we also added some as it related to some of the modeling, our work with ODOT and some of the traffic locations where they see some hot spots or where the traffic gets pretty bad. So we've made those amendments, including, and some of the testimony we got was some modification and rescoping of some of those projects and studies. And so we made some of those changes in the latest draft as well. So we did respond to some public comment on those. So those have been updated and are in Section 12. And then finally for me at least, I think Judith is going to come up. And the other component, I'm sorry, did anybody have questions on that part before we go to the code part? Okay. So the next part that we needed to make changes to comply with Task 5, as well as just some direction that we got both from you and the city attorney and staff, were some changes to Title 17, which is called public improvements, and that's where a lot of our code that the Bureau of Transportation uses. So the two things that we changed or are proposing to change are in the street vacations and in transportation demand management. And then the street vacation is actually a new section of the code. Some of you may remember that street vacations in the past were done as more of a staff report using policies and plans that staff put together, and through this process and through direction from council and the city attorney, as well as just our work with each other, determined it would be best if those were actually in code. So now we've got them in Title 17, it's in the code. We also made a few changes that you approved in May and June to revise the policy 8.48 to include community uses, and then the community uses are also included in the code. We also made a few minor updates to the glossary per direction from the Planning and Sustainability Commission to make some more clarifications related to community uses and the street vacations, and that's in this document as well. So that's all I've got, and I think Judith is going to come up with Eric, I think, to talk about the transportation demand management, unless people had questions about street vacations. Okay, thank you.
Is this on? I'm Judith Gray with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. So we're talking about expanding transportation demand management and our policies. Getting back to the conversations you've already had and what Art conveyed and about, we're very, very constrained in our ability to expand the capacity of the transportation system. And transportation demand management is really a collection of strategies that are very cost-effective ways to get the most out of what we already have. So last week you were briefed on the mixed-use zone and the campus institution zone. So for both of those zones, the Title 33 code language identifies the requirement for transportation demand management, and then that point to Title 17, which provides the guidance on how it would be, what would be required. So in terms of definitions, transportation demand management is it's nothing new for Portland. We have an active transportation division that has been providing TDM programs for a long time. The Sunday Parkways and Safe Routes to School programs are very familiar programs that you might know about. Bike Share is new, and that's a very effective transportation demand management strategy. In the private sector, we have some developers or businesses that have been providing TDM for a long time. The Lloyd District has a couple of decades of having a coordinated TDM strategy that has been really effective. It's really a national model. A lot of individual employers provide free or subsidized transit passes to their employees, so it's not new. For the city to require TDM has been more limited. We have, for a long time, they required it for developments that are under a central city parking review or else developments that have a conditional use master plan. With the new mixed-use zone, there would be a new requirement that developments with more than 10 residential units have to have a TDM plan. So this is a new requirement, and I think it's always challenging to have a new requirement, and this is something I think there will be testimony about. I think it's useful to consider this requirement, though, in context of that TDM is just about strategies to provide access to development. And developers have always had to provide access to their developments. They've usually done it by providing parking. We're asking developers to provide access in some other way, either by a transit pass, a bike share program, to participate with us in doing that as we grow. So it's actually at a fraction of the cost. Nonetheless, it is new. We developed a two-step proposal. And the first step is what you'll be considering with this TSP update, this stage two, which is a pretty simplified plan. It's a pre-approved plan so that residential developers don't have to come up with their own TDM plan. They can still do that if they choose, but most will choose not to. And so the pre-approved plan that you'll be considering has three basic, this pre-approved plan is you'll consider now, and then there's a step two because we know that we want to do some more work, some more engagement to see if there's a more comprehensive strategy. So now let me just talk a little bit about what is in step one. Again, this is pretty simple. has three basic elements. One is a multimodal financial incentive. This would happen one time at the building opening and would be equivalent to the cost of a one-year transit pass for every residential unit. There's flexibility that they can provide